By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. By faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea, as though they were passing through dry land, and the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned. The title of the message this morning, By Faith, Leaving Egypt. By faith, leaving Egypt. And of course, as I said, we'll be looking at verses 27 through 29 this morning. We continue on through the book of Hebrews, but more specifically, the last couple of weeks, we've talked about the life of Moses and the events surrounding his life, including his birth, his time in Pharaoh's household as he was growing up, and today a focus more on the Exodus when he led the children of Israel out of Egypt. Now, it's been interesting to note a couple of things that I've mentioned somewhat in passing is that Moses is not usually someone you immediately think of faith when you think of Moses. I mean, if I were to talk to someone who knows the Bible fairly well and say, okay, what's the first thing you think of when you think of Moses? What aspect of the Bible? Well, typically they would say law. Moses is like the human picture of the law. I mean, he's the one that received the law at Sinai. And so you usually equate Moses with law, but this whole passage is not talking about how awesome Moses was because of the law. It's talking about how awesome God is in Moses having faith. See, it's faith that he's commended for. It's faith that he's saved by. And so it wasn't as though Moses, who had the law and was the leader of Israel at that time, it wasn't as though he was preaching salvation by way of law keeping. He was not. No one's saved by keeping the law, including Moses. Which is why last week I preached a sermon entitled Moses the Christian that would get me shot in many synagogues. But I don't frequent synagogues, so that's okay. Moses the Christian. How could Moses be a Christian? He lived before Jesus did. Well, what I argued last week and what this text says is that he considered, verse 26, he considered the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. And so it links Jesus to Moses in this chapter. Now, what did Moses know about coming events that would regard Jesus Christ? Well, I don't know everything he knew, but I think he had some understanding. God had undoubtedly revealed it to him. And so ultimately, Moses is saved the same way every Old Testament saint is saved. They're not saved by their works, not saved by the law. They're not saved by some sort of a general belief. They're saved by Jesus. I'll say that again. They're saved by Jesus. Because there ain't no other way to get saved. Now, wait a second, I'm in the Old Testament. Jesus hadn't even been born yet. Obviously, I got to have another way of getting saved. No, I'm afraid not. All right, you trust in the one true God. You serve him. You don't know Jesus of Nazareth. But you know that this is the true God and his plan going forward, whatever that is, even if I don't understand all the ins and outs of it, that's what I have faith in. I have him and what he's going to do. Romans tells us in chapter 3 that God passed over the sins previously committed by those people who had faith until the time of when the payment would be made. You say, well, how could God welcome Abraham into heaven? How could Moses go to heaven when he died if Jesus had not yet died for their sins? Well, because God is, he's pretty smart. He knows who his people are. He knows those for whom Christ has paid the price, and in the Old Testament, he knows those for whom Christ would pay the price. He knows who his people are. You say, well, what if they haven't decided yet? Well, you're proving your misunderstanding of my whole point. It's based upon God's knowledge, God's, quote, choice, decision, if you will. It's manifested in your life if you're a believer. And yes, you turn from sin and you come to Christ, but that's God doing something in you that he's not doing in the neighbor sitting next to you, perhaps. And so Moses, as we talked about last time, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He turned his back on Egypt. He was raised as an Egyptian, though he was a Hebrew. You know the story. He was born. His parents even had faith, by faith, when he was born. They saw he was a beautiful child. They didn't kill him. The king said, kill the boys. They said no. They hid him, and then they put him in a basket in a river. That took faith. Pharaoh's daughter finds him. She thinks he's beautiful, and she raises him ultimately in Pharaoh's household. But when Moses got older, he said, I'm not of Pharaoh's household. I'm going to go associate with the people of God. And so he refused that. And he chose, it tells us in verse 25, he chose ill treatment with the people of God rather than the passing pleasure of sin. So he had an incredible offer before him, if you will. He was not just a run-of-the-mill Hebrew, nor just a run-of-the-mill Egyptian. Even if you considered him Egyptian by adoption, he still wasn't a normal Egyptian. He was a prince. He was the adopted grandson of Pharaoh. I mean, he had all the pleasures that Egypt could offer, and they were a bunch, all at his disposal. Or he could identify with the people of God, which is who he actually was by birth. He could identify with them who were slaves at that time, and he could say, I'm going to identify with him, and I'm going to shun the pleasures of Egypt, and I'm going to suffer with the people of God. Who in their right mind does that? Well, it wasn't a mind thing, it was a faith thing. Because when you have faith, you do things sometimes that the world does not understand. Why would you choose that life? Well, because he considered, according to the text, he considered the reproach of Christ greater riches than all the treasures of Egypt. I don't care what Egypt can give me. I love the Lord. And I want to be identified with him. And if that means suffering, well, so be it. And so that's what Moses did. He was looking to the reward. And so last time we talked about this with Moses, and ultimately you could say Moses was a Christian in a sense, because no one comes to the Father but by way of the Son. Today we look at Moses more surrounding his faithful actions having to do with the Exodus when he left Egypt. And notice what it says in verse 27. It says, by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. So by faith Moses left Egypt. Now when you think about that, you realize though, Moses actually left Egypt twice. He left once around the age of 40, and he left again around the age of 80, a little after that, with the people of Israel. You remember, he grew up in Egypt, and the first time he left Egypt was when he killed the Egyptian. And he sees the Egyptian mistreating the Hebrew, and he comes and he kills him. And the matter is found out. And so, in fear, it seems, Moses fled Egypt. He was gone for 40 years. The Lord appears to him in the burning bush. You know this story, one of the most famous stories in all the Bible. The Lord appears to Moses in the burning bush and says, go back to Egypt. You're going to leave my people out. There's a lot went on there, some haggling on Moses' part. But eventually, he did go back, and eventually, he did lead those people out of Egypt. And so Moses left Egypt. And so you see this in verse 27, by faith he left Egypt. Which time is this talking about? You're talking about the first time, you're talking about the second time, because he left Egypt twice. Well, I think it's pretty clear he's talking about the second time here, particularly when you see the events that follow that are linked to this in verse 27. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's wrath, he endured. Verse 28, he kept the Passover, the sprinkling of blood. Verse 29, he passed through the Red Sea. Those are all events surrounding the Exodus, right? And so when it says, by faith he left Egypt, it's probably referring to the time he left the left Egypt at the Exodus with all the people of God. But I do want to point this out. By faith, he left Egypt with the people of God at the age of 80. But by faith, Moses also lived at the age of 40 when he fled Egypt, which is to say he had faith even then. His faith didn't come at the burning bush, in other words. Sometimes people say, oh, Moses was just a rascal when he was younger and hot-headed guy, and he killed an Egyptian, then he fled, and he was just a lost soul wandering around, and oh, the Lord spoke to him at the burning bush, and then he had faith. Actually, he was still pretty wobbly at the burning bush when God was talking to him about what he was going to do. What'd he say? Oh, I have great faith, Lord. Yes, I'll lead the people out of Israel. No, he said, well, I can't even talk straight. No. I'm not your man. I mean, I'm old. I mean, who made man's mouth? You think I'm big enough to send you to Egypt and actually do this through you or not? I say all that to say this. Moses had faith, but it wasn't always stellar, even in his old age. Moses had faith at 40. All those years before, I know this because the Bible tells us this. Look at verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. So what motivated him to say, I'm not your son. I belong to the people of God. What motivated him to do that? It wasn't just sinful pride. The text tells us it was faith that motivated that. And so Moses had faith. Even when he fled the first time, he had faith. Let me read this from Exodus chapter 2, verse 14. This was exactly what happened. Moses kills the Egyptian. The next day, the Hebrews are fighting amongst themselves. He comes and tries to smooth things over. Exodus chapter 2, verse 14, but he said, the man said to Moses, who made you a prince or a judge over us? Are you intending to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? Then Moses was afraid and said, surely the matter has become known. When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the presence of Pharaoh and settled in the land of Midian. So the interesting thing here, a couple of interesting things. First of all, Moses is trying to be a peacemaker there with his brothers, right? His Hebrew brethren. They're fighting with each other. Man, what are y'all fighting for? Come on, we need to get on the same page. We need to, you know, we need to be focused here. We need to all get along. And what does the guy say? Who made you a prince over us? Now, that had to have been a stinging word for him to use, right? Moses, the prince, what would that imply? You're an Egyptian, as far as we're concerned. You're not our prince. He was a prince of Egypt, right? He was Pharaoh's grandson, so he lived in the royal household. He would have rightly been called a prince in that household. And the Hebrews, he comes to them saying, I'm really one of you, and I'm going to lead you out of bondage. And they say, who made you a prince over us? Go back to Pharaoh's household. They might treat you like a prince. We don't treat you like a prince. You're not a prince in our eyes. Who made you a prince or a judge over us? Are you intending to kill me? Well, this guy was real. He had some sass to him, didn't he? You going to kill me like you did the Egyptian yesterday? Now, as soon as he said that, the whole game changed, didn't it? This didn't go from being, okay, I'm rallying the troops and we're all going to exodus on out of here. No, this went to a fugitive on the run. Moses is not a big, massive leader now. Now he's scared. With good reason. Because the text says, as I just mentioned here in Exodus chapter 2, when Pharaoh heard of the matter, he tried to kill Moses. Now, how'd he try? I don't know. But if he could have got his hands on him, or some of his men could have got his hands on him, Moses would have been done. I suspect that tension between Moses and Pharaoh had already been going on for a while. I suspect the fact, whenever that was specifically, that Moses said, I'm going to go suffer with the people of God rather than hang out here in Pharaoh's house. When Pharaoh heard of that, I suspect there was already tension. There was already tension between Pharaoh and the Hebrews anyway, so much so that he was killing their babies just because he was afraid of the army they may raise up when those little boys grew up. Moses escaped death, grew up in Pharaoh's household to do what? Shun Pharaoh and go back to the people of God. It probably didn't take much for Pharaoh to have an excuse to kill Moses. And so when it says here in verse 27, by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's wrath, you assume that to mean the second time, because the first time he did appear to fear the king's wrath, right? That's why he left. That's why he fled, because he was afraid of what the king would do to him. Now, an important thing to note, though, is that when it speaks of fear, there's more than one kind of fear in the Bible. In fact, in your life, there's more than one kind of fear. There's a good kind of fear, and there's a bad kind of fear. There's one kind of fear that I would say is a bad kind of fear. It might be defined like this: a cautious anxiety that you have towards someone who hates you and wants to harm you. All right? A cautious anxiety towards someone who hates you and wants to harm you. You know somebody wants to beat you up, then you might have a fear of them. Now, there's a different kind of fear as well, and this is a good kind of fear. I would define it this way: a trusting reverence towards someone who loves you and wants what is best for you. Now, you see the difference? One person wants to harm you because they hate you. One person wants what's best for you because they love you. You revere them. It's fear, but it's a different kind of fear than the type of fear that you have for a burglar or something like that. Obviously, it's a difference between how you might fear Pharaoh and how you might fear God. They don't deserve the same kind of fear. Moses feared Pharaoh the first way. In other words, he knew Pharaoh hated him and he knew Pharaoh could harm him. Moses feared God the second way. He trusted. He had a reverence for him. He knew that God loved him, and he knew that God knew what was best. And so there's more than one kind of fear. And so when you look at that, in some ways you say, well, Moses, he fled the first time because he feared Pharaoh. Well, he feared him in one way, but he didn't fear him in another way. He did not revere him. He did not respect him. If he did, he would have obeyed him, right? What command did Moses disobey? The command for him to be executed. Aren't you going to honor the king and come in and turn yourself in and be executed? No, I'm not going to respect and revere that command. I'm leaving town. Yeah, okay, he's motivated by fear of getting killed, but he doesn't respect that king. If he really loved and respected that king, he might come back and say, oh, king, you're right. You're just. I give my life. That's not what he did. So there's two different kinds of fear. Moses feared Pharaoh with a bad kind of fear. He feared God with a good kind of fear, and that's how you and I should be too, by the way. We should have a special reverence set aside for God alone. And there are echoes of that reverence in other human relationships. I mean, you should have a reverence for your parents, and you have a reverence for other authority figures in your life or older saints that you respect. You have a reverence for them, but not on the same level that you have a reverence for God. And you, the reverence you have for God is not the same kind of, quote, fear that you should have for governing authorities, if you will, out in the world. And presidents and governors and kings and whatnot, they don't deserve the type of fear that's reserved for God alone. Yes, respect them. Yes, respect the laws of the land, but don't worship them. Well, I would never worship any kind of government leader. Well, historically, there have been a lot of people that have worshiped government leaders. So you got to be careful with that. So Moses had faith. He had faith when he fled to Midian. He had faith, obviously, the whole time he was in Midian. He had faith when he came back to town. And he did come back to town at the age of 80, and it was a whole different story when he came back the second time. Now, think about this. Now, Moses thought that at 40 that they knew he was their deliverer. The Bible tells us that. Acts chapter 7, verse 23. He was approaching the age of 40. It entered his mind to visit his brethren, the sons of Israel. And when he saw one of them being treated unjustly, he defended him and took vengeance for the oppressed by striking down the Egyptian. And he supposed that his brethren understood that God was granting them deliverance through him. But they did not understand. And so you might wonder, well, when did Moses have this inkling that he was going to be the man that God would use to bring the Hebrews out of bondage? You say, well, he never knew that till the burning bush. Wrong. He knew it at least at 40. And obviously prior to that, I mean, that's part of what motivated him to go out to the people, it seems, and start trying to make peace. And the text tells us specifically, he thought they knew he was the man to lead them, but they did not understand it that way. And so what happens? He flees. He flees into the land of Midian, and he's there for 40 years. And now at 80, he comes back. Things are different this time. You know what's different this time? Primarily. There's a lot of things different, but you know primarily what's different this time. You look at Moses at 40 when he has the idea of going to go and deliver his people, and it ends up him being a fugitive. And now at the age of 80, he comes back with the same idea of delivering his people. What's the difference? I mean, this time it actually works. This time it's actually going to happen. Instead of Moses getting killed, the Hebrews are going to be freed. Well, there are a lot of differences you might point to. You might say, well, in one regard, Moses is older now. I mean, at 40, maybe he was kind of brash. He did kill a man, and now he's more patient at 80. He's more experienced. He's had 40 years of living, and so he knows how to deal with people better. Maybe he's a better leader than he would have been at 40. All kinds of lessons he might have learned out in Midian. I mean, maybe he's got a much closer walk with the Lord than he would have had at 40. I mean, who knows? You can point to all sorts of human explanations whereby Moses perhaps is better qualified at 80 than he was at 40, but that's not the reason why it worked this time, ultimately. All that may be true, but the ultimate reason why the Exodus worked the second time was because it was God's will. What about the first time? Didn't God want his people out of bondage? No. If so, they would have been out of bondage. Did not want them out of bondage yet. Now, you'll remember he had already told Abraham it was going to be 400 years. I don't know, and I'm not good at math anyway. But if Moses comes to the people and it's been 360 years and he says, well, I'm your man, I'm leading you out. And they're like, well, we don't see you as a prince or a king over us. And Moses is confused. He probably was not a very good math student like me. Didn't realize it hadn't been 400 years. You're not going to lead them out this year. Just another thought. Well, now it is God's will. And we do see Moses, his faith on display as he prepares to leave Egypt, not fearing the king's wrath. It's interesting when you think about this, he doesn't fear Pharaoh, but he does fear God. And so when you think about that, he did not fear the king that he could see with his own two eyes and was threatening to kill him. I don't fear that one. But the king that he could not see, and it says that, he endured as seeing him who is unseen. Verse 27. For he endured as seeing him who is unseen. The one that he could not see, that king, that's the one he feared. Isn't that amazing faith? I mean, he has Pharaoh standing in front of him, hating him, wanting him to die. And he has the power to kill him. But he can't lay a hand on him. Why? Because the unseen king won't let him. And Moses has faith in the unseen king. It doesn't matter what stands in front of you unless the unseen king says that that person can harm you. And sometimes he does, by the way. God's people do get killed every day by wicked people. You say, well, where's God there? God's right there ordaining that death and then welcoming that saint into glory. Well, if God loved him so much, how come he let him get killed? What would you prefer him to do? A quick death from an evil Muslim? Or would God show his love greater by letting that person live to be 100 and suffer in a bed for 5 years? We don't always think things through, I think. Oh, it's horrible that person died, that Christian was martyred. Yes, it is horrible. And, oh, we feel horrible for their family, but we're all going to die one way or another. Now, if you want to tell me what you think is going to be pleasant and sweet in terms of death, well, maybe that can be arranged, but I haven't seen a whole lot of deaths that were pleasant. God determines that. We trust whatever God says on that. But Moses endured as seeing him who is unseen, which means Moses got up every day and he trusted God. This applies to you. This isn't just talking Old Testament Moses. Okay, as soon as he starts talking about me, I'll pay attention. I'm talking to you now. The very same kind of faith that Moses had every day is the kind of faith you need to have every day. Egyptians aren't chasing you, and there's not a Red River in front of you, but you don't know what you're going to face this week. It could very well be something that has the potential to take your life. If not, it could really make your life miserable, particularly if you face something this week that causes you to foolishly take your eyes off the Lord. If that happens, you will have heartache this week. And Moses gives us the solution to that. Verse 27, he endured as seeing him who is unseen. Endured means his life was not a cakewalk. It means it was hard. He lived a hard life. People griped at him all the time. And he's an old man. He's sick of this before it even starts. He started this at 80. He was ready to retire. No, you got 40 more years, Moses. But I'll be with you. That's all that matters, though, isn't it? I'll be with you. Moses got up every day and trusted God, and it tells us he endured as seeing him who is unseen. In other words, true faith does not require a visible sign from God. And believe me, Moses saw some pretty incredible things, but he endured as seeing him who is unseen. God doesn't owe you some kind of physical sign to prove who he is. They required that. They requested that in the days of Jesus. Remember that? And Jesus didn't say, well, you know, that's a reasonable request. I'll see what I can do. Jesus, to the contrary, said, this wicked and evil and twisted generation seeks after a sign. No sign will be given unto it, except for the sign of Jonah, which was a reference to his death 3 days later, coming up out of the grave. Probably the most incredible sign he could have possibly given, and they still didn't believe in him, except for the ones who were chosen. So it's wrong to expect a sign from God. True faith doesn't require a visible sign from God. True faith trusts God even when he can't be seen and the future is unknown to us. That's what faith is. True faith doesn't require a sign from God. True faith trusts God even when he can't be seen with our eyes and the future is unknown to us, because we know even though we can't see him, he's there. And even though the future is unknown to us, it's ordained by him. And we have no fear, or we should have no fear based on that reality. We fear the Lord, we don't have to fear anyone else, or anything else, or any other circumstances. Is that easy to do on a day-to-day basis? No, it's hard. It's really, 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 really hard. But if you want to live a victorious Christian life full of joy and comfort and pleasure that's not sinful and fleeting, but that is eternal and abiding, then you're going to get up every day and you're going to trust the Lord the way Moses did. That's the only way it's going to happen. The rest of the time, if you're not doing it like this, then you're like a reed shaking in the wind. I remember Jesus using that reference to John the Baptist. What'd you guys go out to see with John the Baptist? You think he's a reed shaking in the wind? Jesus' point is that's not what John the Baptist was. What do you think? He's just kind of wishy-washy and everything just kind of gets him rattled? No, he's a stalwart man of faith. So by faith, Moses left Egypt twice. Once by himself, once with the people of Israel. Secondly, by faith, Moses kept the Passover. Verse 28 tells us, by faith he kept the Passover, the sprinkling of the blood, so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. Now you remember, you've studied this, you know what's going on with the initiation of the Passover. They were to have a lamb, and they were to take some of the blood and put it on the doorposts outside. It was a mark of protection, because God said, I'm going to strike down the firstborn in every household, but the angel of death would pass over those that had the blood on the doorpost, and only those without it would get hit. The Egyptians would lose the firstborn. That was one of the plagues that came upon Egypt. And so it says, by faith, Moses kept the Passover. And this is what it tells us in Exodus 12 regarding that. I will go through the land of Egypt on that night. This is God talking. I will strike down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and all the gods of Egypt. I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you live. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you, destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. Now it says, by faith, Moses kept the Passover. You say, well, where does the faith come in? I mean, does it take faith to slap some blood on a door? You telling me that an infidel doesn't have the ability to paint? It's what it represented that showed the faith. He's trusting God that God will do what he says he's going to do. And those children aren't going to die. Put yourself in that place. I'm thinking, if this is me, all right, we've killed the lamb, we've got the blood, and I mean, I'm lathering that blood all over that house. I want to make sure that angel's not nearsighted. Oh, man. Make sure he sees this blood. Aaron, kill me another lamb. I'm going to put two coats on there. You get the point. That took faith, didn't it? That took faith. God said, if that blood is there, our child won't die. Let's believe him and sleep well tonight. It was a trusting of God, not only that he would save their children, it was also trusting God that he would protect them from angry Egyptians who would wake up that morning in a much different type of household. And who are they going to take that out on? By faith, they trusted God. By faith, they trusted God to get them out of Egypt, that they would actually leave. This Exodus would actually happen the way God said it would, because on paper, this makes no sense. There's no way Egypt's just going to voluntarily let all of their slave labor go. Never in a million years. Oh, it won't take a million years when God's in charge of it. Don't you worry about that. They'll let them go and give them gold for the ride. Get out of our sight. And they'll chase them. That's a mistake, too, on their part. All right, now the blood. Of course, you see Christian symbolism all over this. The blood of the Lamb saves from death. Who's that talking about? Who's the Lamb of God? Jesus. You see Christian symbolism all over. Salvation comes how? By doing it the way God says to do it. Salvation is only from the Lord. Leaving Egypt. And where are they going? To the promised land. You seeing Christian symbolism there? Yes. Bondage to promised land. Now, we're not in bondage to Egypt. We're in bondage to something much, much worse than that. We're in bondage to sin. And that'll damn us eternally. And so the Lord frees us from our bondage, which is a bondage to sin, and now we're free, and we live our lives on earth, but eventually we're heading to a promised land too. And I guarantee it's better than physical Israel. It's better than the land of Canaan. We're talking about a heavenly city, and that's what they were looking for, a city whose builder and maker is God. Even Abraham wasn't dying to get to Israel. He was dying to get to heaven. He wanted to be in God's presence. And he endured. And so it says, by faith he kept the Passover, verse 28, sprinkling of the blood, so that the firstborn, he who destroyed the firstborn, would not touch them. It's interesting to think of Moses keeping the Passover, because it was a ceremony that God ordained on the basis of the Passover, at the event of the Passover, but the ultimate fulfillment was way future still yet. Now, how much the Hebrews in general understood the true significance of that Passover is a matter of debate. But when they kept the Passover and they were saved by the blood of the Lamb, and death did not befall them because of the blood of the Lamb, there are huge Christian implications for that. You say, well, what about us? Do we keep the Passover? How come we don't keep the Passover? Some people are obsessed with Old Testament ceremonialism. Oh, we should do that in a church. Well, we should. We need to. There's benefit in learning things about Old Covenant Israel, how they did things, what they represented, whatnot. I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying this. We don't keep the Passover because we live in the fulfillment of it. We don't need a Passover meal saying, oh, someday Jesus will save us. We live every day in the reality of the Passover. The Lamb of God who came, not the one who was coming, the one who came and died for our sins. That's our daily reality. And so we don't have to do a ceremony looking forward, oh, someday, come for us, Lord. He came. He paid the price. The real Passover lamb, the real Passover lamb didn't make a sound like bah. The real Passover lamb spoke, and he said, it is finished. It's an interesting thing. By faith, they kept the Passover. Israel was showing faith by keeping the Passover. They were remembering what God had done, and even though they did not probably understand this at all, the act itself is pointing to what God was going to do in the future with his son. We don't do Passover meals, but we do have ceremonies that the Lord has given us, ordinances, if you will, and they have very similar meanings in the church. There's some debate about this. I say there's two, baptism and Lord's Supper. Both acts of faith, if you will. What's baptism? Well, baptism is when you get in this thing back here and we put water in it and put you down under the water and we bring you up. You say, well, that's weird. What do you do that for? Well, we do it because Jesus commanded his followers to do it. If you're really a follower of mine, you claim to be a follower of mine, this is how you're going to announce it, if you will, to the church. And dare I say, to the whole world. I'm a follower of Christ, and I, just as Christ died, I die with him, and just Christ, as Christ arose, I arise with him. He has cleansed me because of his blood. I identify with him. I'm not ashamed of him. I'm not embarrassed of him. I want to be obedient unto him. That's why we have baptism. What about Lord's Supper? Well, Lord's Supper is a way of saying to believers, Jesus paid for us. Jesus paid for our sins. And it is an act of faith in this regard. Not only when we partake of Lord's Supper, not only are we remembering what Jesus did on Calvary, we're remembering something else too, something that hasn't happened yet, which makes it an act of faith. 1 Corinthians 11:26, for as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Old Testament, they were looking for the Messiah to come. And guess what? There's a sense in which New Testament, we're also looking for the Messiah to come. We're looking for him to come back. And every time we partake of Lord's Supper, we're proclaiming that. Ah, where's the promise of his coming? Oh, he's coming. We believe he's coming. We believe he came, he died, he rose, he ascended, and he's coming again. And we proclaim that every time we partake of Lord's Supper. And I'll conclude with this. By faith, Moses passed through the Red Sea, verse 29. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing on dry land, and the Egyptians, when they attempted, were drowned. I love stories with happy endings. The bad guys died. That's a happy ending. Some of you say, oh, the poor Egyptians. Well, I mean, there's a sense in which you have pity on the poor Egyptians who wanted to kill the people. But Generally, if someone's chasing you and wants to kill you, and God so ordains that they drowned in pursuit of you, you might be happy about that. I would be. Maybe you wouldn't. You're nicer than I am. By faith, Moses passed through the Red Sea. But again, I ask you, is this faith or fear? Because notice verse 29, by faith, they passed through the Red Sea. 27 says he, 28 says he. By faith, he left Egypt. By faith, he kept the Passover. He who? Moses. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea. Who does that mean? Not just Moses. Okay, so all of Israel had faith. All of Israel had faith and marched through the Red Sea. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing on dry land. Well, if you go back to Exodus and read the account, they don't sound very faithful. I'll give you an excerpt. Exodus chapter 14, verse 10, as Pharaoh drew near, the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became very frightened. Doesn't sound like faith. So the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord, and then they said to Moses, is it because there were no graves in Egypt you've taken us to die in the wilderness? And some faithful folks, aren't they? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not what we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? Oh, those are damnable words. Do you hear what they said? Moses, leave us alone that we might serve the Egyptians. Ugh. That's more than a nation. That's paganism. And Moses is more than a man. He's a man of God, a man sent by God to deliver them from bondage. And what do they say? Oh, let us worship the Egyptians. Let us serve the Egyptians. People today are the same way. It's not Egyptians, but it's the sinful bondage. Oh, don't try to pull me away from my sinful bondage. They won't say it that way, but that's what it is. Continues on in Exodus 14, verse 15. The Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the sons of Israel to go forward. As for you, lift up your staff, stretch out your hand over the sea, and divide it. That took faith on Moses' part, right? That's one of the places where there's faith. Sons of Israel shall go through the midst of the sea on dry land. As for me, behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians. They will follow you, and I'll be honored through Pharaoh and his army. How's he going to be honored in Pharaoh and his army? By killing them, yes. By drowning them. Through his chariots, his horsemen. Then the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. Oh boy, will they. Some of them, oh boy, will they. I got cussed out by an atheist this weekend. Online. He didn't say it to my face. He's brave. He writes me private emails without his name on them. But one article I wrote a couple years ago, I didn't even write this thing new, but I was talking about the judgment day in this article, and I said, every person will stand before the Lord and give an account. He was angry about that. After calling me several different names and questioning the parentage of my mom and dad at the time of my birth, regarding my statement that everyone's going to stand before the Lord someday and give an account, his rebuttal to me was, that's really what you believe? Then prove it to me. Prove to me I'll really have to do that. My answer is, I don't have to prove that to you. God will prove that to you soon enough. Oh, how you'll wish you had a different mindset. Prove it to me. Not my job to prove it to you. There's a lot of things I could try to prove to you, but God can prove things in a far more clear and devastating fashion than I ever could. Egyptians honored God, not because they wanted to honor God, but because God's will was done and they could not stop it. God hasn't changed. Exodus chapter 14, verse 30, Israel says they believe. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians. They saw the Egyptians dead. When Israel saw the great power of the Lord, they feared the Lord and they believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. All right, so did they believe or did they not believe? Did they have faith when they went through the water? Did they not have faith? Well, like I said, the text goes, he, and then they. He, as in Moses, left Egypt. He kept the Passover, Moses. Well, the rest of them did too, but he's the one that's mentioned. They, meaning all of them, left Egypt. Who are the they that had the faith to go through the Red Sea? Well, the they might refer to Moses and a remnant of people who had genuine faith. Or it may be referring to all of them. All of them passed through, yes, but how many of them had faith? Well, perhaps there's a sense in which you say, well, they had faith because they believed, at least at that time, that God was going to deliver them in that one particular situation. That's not the same thing as saving faith, but maybe they had that kind of faith. Well, they all benefited from Moses' faith, for one thing. They all benefited because he got them through there. He convinced them to go through there and that God would take care of them. Now, did they have saving faith or not? All this bunch of Israelites, did they have saving faith or not? They had some level of faith, it says. They believed Moses. They believed God. And so on some level, they had faith. But then again, this very same group of people, we're told in the very same epistle, Hebrews chapter 3, we're told that they perished because of unbelief. Isn't that interesting? Hebrews 3, verse 16, who provoked him when they heard? Indeed, did not all those who came out of Egypt led by Moses, and with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they would not enter his rest, but to those who were disobedient? So we see they were not able to enter because of unbelief. Whatever, quote, faith they had doesn't sound like a genuine saving type of faith. Maybe a momentary intellectual belief that, okay, God will get us through this. But it was not lasting because they continued to grumble against Moses and against God. And eventually God said, they're not going to enter my rest. They're going to die in the wilderness. Moses, keep leading them for 40 years until this generation dies off because they're not going in. I think that means a whole lot more than just the promised land in a physical sense. It seems pretty clear. Well, let's close. Here's the fact of the matter. Moses was saved by grace through faith. And any of that lot of people there that are in heaven today are in heaven because they were saved by grace through faith. And there's a whole lot of people in this world that have something they call faith, but it's far short of what the Bible would describe as genuine saving faith. Oh, they believe Jesus really is the Son of God. Oh, they believe he really rose from the dead. Oh, they believe that you should join a church. Oh, they believe you should be baptized. But their life gives no evidence whatsoever of being born again. Christian is someone who's born again. All those other things are good things that Christians should do. But a Christian is someone who's born again. And when someone's born again, their whole life is changed. Not just their Sundays. Their whole life is changed if they're born again. That's what real faith is all about. And that's what you got to ask yourself in closing. Have you been saved by grace through faith? Do you know Christ? Or is he just a word that you toss around? I mean, do you really know him? Are you committed to following him every day? Because that's what real faith does. You're not going to have a Red Sea, probably, in front of you tomorrow, but the Apostle Paul told the early Christians in Acts chapter 14, it's through many tribulations we must enter the kingdom. Trials, hard times, problems, what awaits you this week? Maybe death. Are you ready for that? By faith, Moses left Egypt, which is to say he also left the paganism. He left the bondage to sin. He left Egypt. By faith, he kept the Passover, meaning, ultimately, he trusted in the true Lamb of God. By faith, he crossed the Red Sea. He believed God for the impossible, and then he watched as God did the impossible. I know it sounds strange to many ears, but I'm telling you, the only way Moses was saved, the only reason Moses was saved, The only hope Moses had was in Jesus Christ. He had faith in the one true God, which means he also had faith in the coming Christ who would pay for his sins. That's the only hope you have too, Jesus Christ. Do you know him? Do you follow him? Does your life give evidence of that? Are you saved by grace through faith? Let us pray.